Coming up, faith and the brain, how spirituality affects us.
Not only does it have a profound influence on who we are, but it actually can change our brain and to change ourselves over time.
And Father Leo, a priest who's also a chef. He says food is a natural part of his ministry.
Theologically, this is what Jesus did. Most of his greatest lessons were taught around a dinner table.
Plus, for kids, an interactive museum with a religious twist.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're yourretirementcompany.com. Also by the Henry Luce Foundation and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Welcome. I'm Kim Lawton, sitting in for Bob Abernethy. Thank you for joining us. As Arizona's controversial new immigration law dominated the news this week, a broad coalition of religious groups renewed the call for comprehensive immigration reform. Faith-based groups protested around the country as the new law went into effect. Even though some of the most contentious provisions were blocked by a federal judge, religious activists still held prayer vigils and rallies in several cities, including Phoenix and Washington. They said immigration is a moral issue that must be addressed at the national level, and they called on President Obama to push for reform. Many in the faith community are particularly concerned about current immigration policies that break up families.
The faith community has no other response but to declare this immoral and illegal.
In Iraq, violence once again marred a popular Shiite pilgrimage. Hundreds of thousands came to the holy city of Karbala this week for the annual gathering to mark the birth of Imam Muhammad al-Mahdi, a 9th century Shiite saint. And the pilgrims kept coming even after a series of deadly car bombings carried out by suspected Sunni insurgents. Although sectarian violence in Iraq has dropped significantly in recent years, important religious holidays are still frequently occasions for new attacks. This week, the Lutheran World Federation chose Palestinian Bishop Munib Yonan as its next president. He'll be the first Arab leader of the umbrella group for the world's 70 million Lutherans. Yonan is based in Jerusalem and has been a vocal advocate for religions playing a greater role in bringing peace to the Holy Land. A new report from Elizabethtown College in Pennsylvania says America's Amish population is growing and pushing westward. Two-thirds of the Amish are still concentrated in their traditional communities in Ohio, Indiana, and, of course, Lancaster County, PA. But according to the report, the search for affordable and fertile farmland has led to the establishment of Amish settlements in a total of 28 states, including a new one in South Dakota. The report also found that because of high birth rates, the number of Amish in the U.S. has increased by 10% in the last 2 years. It's the time of year when many of us try to schedule a vacation to get away from it all. Scientists have long found an association between relaxation and health. Now there's growing evidence that spiritual practices have a beneficial and measurable effect on the brain. In his book, How God Changes Your Brain, Andrew Newberg reports that meditation improves memory and reduces stress, and how you view God can affect the structure of your brain. Lucky Severson has a story.
Sa-ta-na-ma.
As unlikely as it may seem, Vincent Fedor is practicing meditation.
Then you go into the whisper, sa, ta, na, ma.
Vincent and his wife Judy started meditation after they answered a questionnaire about improving their memory. That was one objective of Dr. Andrew Newberg.
What do we have here?
The other was that he wanted to scan their brains while they did it. Meditation. Here are Vincent's scans before he learned to meditate and after he had been doing it for 8 weeks.
Okay, so it's asymmetric, more active here than here. And after meditation, it's more active here than here. So simply doing the practice of the meditation, he's altered the activity in this very, very important part of the brain. And this is really important because this means that he's changed the way his brain is working.
Since meditating, Vincent feels he's become a better high school track coach.
I think I've become a calmer, more tolerant person. If a situation comes up, I don't go to the angry side. I go take the calmer road. And you know what? I think the kids see this. I think I've become a better coach because of it.
It makes sense that if by doing this practice he has increased the activity in that frontal lobe, he's actually able to improve the way in which he monitors his emotional responses to people and perhaps can treat them with more compassion.
Dr. Newberg has studied nuns who do repetitive prayer, and he has seen the same kind of results. He's been studying the effects of meditation and prayer on the brain for several years and is considered one of the leading experts in a new field called neurotheology. Allahu Akbar,
Allahu Akbar. We've learned that being religious or spiritual has a very profound effect on who we are. It has a very profound effect on our biology and on our brain. And what we've found more recently is that not only does it have a profound influence on who we are, but it actually can change our brain and to change ourselves over time.
Here at the University of Pennsylvania Center for Spirituality and the Mind, images of the brain are taken during or after a person prays or meditates.
The more you use a part of the brain, the more blood flow it gets, and the brighter or the more red it looks on the scans.
Over the years, Dr. Newberg has adapted a 12-step meditation exercise that includes sound, movement, and breathing.
Sa-ta-na-ma. The first 2 minutes, the mantra is sung. The second 2 minutes, the mantra is whispered. The third sequence is silence, back into the whisper, and finishing with the song. After that, it's deep breathing, holding in. That's done 3 times. Body relaxes, and the mantra is completed. The minute I can start doing it and moving my fingers, my body gets calmer. It's very soothing. To me, it gets almost in a passive mode. And then you have energy afterwards because you became so calm.
Religion and spirituality do help to lower a person's feelings of depression, anxiety, gives them some meaning in life, helps them to cope with things, and that's going to have a potentially very beneficial effect.
But Newberg has made another discovery, a controversial one, that our belief system, how we view God, can make a huge difference in how it affects our well-being. If we believe in a loving God, it can have a positive effect, even prolong our lives. But believing in a judgmental, authoritarian God can produce fear, anger, and stress, and that's not healthy.
When it ultimately turns towards hatred, and whether it's people who believe in abortion versus those who don't, whether it's just one religion versus another, when you hear rhetoric which is hateful, filled with anger, that turns on the different parts of the brain that are involved in our stress response and our anger response.
George Hanzo is a chaplain with the Healthcare Chaplaincy of New York City. He says Newberg's conclusions that a person's belief in a certain kind of God can be unhealthy is bound to be controversial among people of faith.
They're saying that there is one word of God, and God commands us to follow that word. And if we want to save people from God's anger and condemnation, we're obliged to get other people to believe as we do.
I'm not arguing that people need to change their beliefs per se. I mean, if they feel that their perspective on God is right, I mean, then that's terrific. But I think that what we have to all be careful about is the anger and the hatred, and that's what has detrimental effects both on the individual as well as on society as a whole.
Skeptics of Newberg's work question if science should be delving into religion and spirituality in the first place, and they ask if his research has actually proven much of anything.
Faith is, by definition, reliance on things you cannot see and cannot know. Faith is something we believe God gives to us. It's not something we invent. As a person of faith, this whole debate about what is going to be knowable, is not a particularly interesting question to me.
You know, if we get a brain scan of somebody while they're experiencing being in God's presence, as I've always said, that doesn't prove that God was in the room. It doesn't prove that God wasn't in the room. What it proves is that when the person had the experience of interacting
they
with God,
thought he was.
This is what the change was going on in their brain.
Just thank you, Jesus.
Dr. Newberg has found that there are some religious practices where the person is intensely focused and others where they just allow themselves to be taken over. For example, speaking in tongues.
Oh, my Baba Santa, me, Jose, me, Baba Santa. Hala, did you Santa, my Baba Soto? Hara, Baba Santa.
Dr. Newberg has scanned the brains of people of all belief systems, of people with no faith, and those of deep conviction, like Donna Morgan, who is a Pentecostal.
When you're in that realm of praise, you just give over to the Holy Spirit.
There are some people who argue that certain people are predisposed or hardwired toward transcendent experiences, and some are not. It's an argument Chaplain Hanzo disagrees with.
I don't believe in a God that creates people, especially selectively, in a way that makes it difficult for them to access this God. That's not my God.
I think to some degree we all are hardwired to be able to think about things on these levels. It's just a matter of how much we engage that and if we find a path that does help us to engage that for ourselves.
Newberg says people of faith shouldn't worry that his research will ever diminish their faith.
I don't think that our science is going to be able to definitively prove that God exists or doesn't exist. It is ultimately a leap of faith.
Newberg believes the number one activity that can exercise your brain and enrich your life is faith.
When you have those kind of positive, optimistic beliefs in the world, in God or religion, depending on the person, that really, over the long haul, seems to be the thing that really provides a benefit for us in terms of our mental state and in terms of our physical health and well-being.
As for his own faith, he describes himself as a searcher who is still searching. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Lucky Severson in Philadelphia.
Now, a profile of Father Leo Padelinghug, an unusual Catholic priest who's turned his hobby of cooking into a ministry. He has a cooking show online, he's written a cookbook, and he even took down celebrity chef Bobby Flay in a televised cooking competition last year. Father Leo is gaining international attention with his popular recipe of food, spirituality, and laughter. I visited him at the seminary where he teaches in Emmitsburg, Maryland.
Entregado por vosotros.
Roman Catholic priests deal a lot with spiritual food, but Father Leo Padelinghug works with food of a more earthly nature as well.
And I've gotten myself here a nice, beautiful piece of flank steak.
Father Leo is a chef who has his own web-based cooking show called Grace Before Meals. It gets more than 10,000 hits a day from around the world. He's written a cookbook with the same title.
We ask God to bless us this holy season and the food we're about to receive.
He says food is very much part of his priestly ministry.
Theologically, this is what Jesus did. Most of his greatest lessons were taught around a dinner table.
In his day job, Father Leo is director of pastoral field education at Mount St. Mary's Seminary in Emmitsburg, Maryland, the second oldest and second largest Catholic seminary in the country.
Sometimes I like to say I'm teaching future shepherds how to feed their hungry flock.
He teaches classes on a variety of subjects, such as how to give a good sermon. And even here, he finds a connection with food.
I teach a preaching class, which means I can't have guys dishing out stale, boring leftovers, but dynamic things that are going to make their appetites just expand and to whet their appetites to show that what we have to offer is good news.
Father Leo says his mother taught him how to cook when he was a kid.
My love for cooking started just because I like to eat. And
I love that sound.
After doing my activities, I would get bored quickly. Mother would invite me to help her with cooking because it's a multitasking thing, and that actually piqued my interest.
Father Leo grew up in Baltimore, where his family had emigrated from the Philippines. He says faith and food were both very important in his family's life.
My family's style of eating is very much a feast day celebration. And yes, we prayed before every meal, and it was something very serious because in my country, not everyone gets a chance to eat. And so they reminded us that even though we were living in America, a land of plenty, there are a lot of people who don't have the blessings on the table as well as the blessings around the table.
He didn't always know he would become a priest. He first dabbled in several other fields, from breakdancing to martial arts.
I used to be a martial artist, still practice a little bit of it, a third-degree black belt instructor in Taekwondo, as well as a full-contact Filipino martial art called Arnis. So if you ask what I did for fun before I became a priest, I used to beat people up with sticks. That's what I did.
In the midst of it all, he says a series of events, including a skiing accident and a breakup with his girlfriend, had him turning to God in prayer. Then he says he traveled to the Philippines with the U.S. stick fighting team.
I remember going to this one village, and we were handing out candy to people. And there was one little boy who only had a T-shirt on, and he came up to me, and I gave him a piece of candy. And I looked in his eyes, and I thought to myself, had it not been for my dad bringing us to America, that could be me.
He felt that God was calling him to help people like that boy, and to do so by becoming a priest. He entered seminary and was ordained 10 years ago when he was 29. Father Leo says the food part of the ministry evolved naturally as he began building relationships with his parishioners. He often scheduled counseling sessions around mealtimes.
They call me Father. I'm supposed to be part of their family. And so I would help them. We would gather in the kitchen. We would help cook. I'd help set up the table. And they saw the human side to me and not just the spiritual side.
Bless his food. And
the idea for a cooking show was born just after the attacks on September 11th, 2001.
So after a very tragic weekend worth of masses where the churches were full, hungering for inspiration of hope, we ourselves, the ministers, we were spent. So we went on a little retreat together. And I did all the cooking, comfort food. So one of the priests suggested, I love watching you cook. It would be great if I had a video camera and just taped all of this, and you could talk about food, faith, family, and culture. And I looked at him and I said, that's one of the dumbest ideas I have ever heard.
But his fellow priests didn't think it was so dumb. Father Leo says they kept nagging him about it and eventually connected him with a producer and a production company who loved the idea of a priest cooking show.
You see that slob right there? That's what confession is for.
He now does webisodes of the cooking show online, often with the help of his seminarians, and his website has recipes and blogs.
Cleanliness is next to, you know what I mean.
He's also become a much sought-after speaker, and he does cooking demonstrations around the country, such as this appearance at the Delaware State Fair.
This beef is going to, oh my gosh, it's making me pray already.
His motto is feeding people mind, body, and soul, and he believes that families are strengthened when they share meals together.
We know that families are buying so much into the fast food mentality that they spend no time with each other. My objective with Grace Before Meals is to create many Thanksgivings throughout the year.
When he speaks to a secular audience, he tries not to be aggressively religious.
We all are hungering for something. And that's why people go everywhere, to find something to satisfy them. And what I'd like to invite you to consider is to make sure you have a balanced diet for your body, your mind, and your soul.
I loved how he brought the spirituality into, you know, the mealtime and the family. I think that's probably what drew everybody's attention. And the food was delicious.
He's gaining international attention and was just challenged to a cooking competition by celebrity chef Bobby Flay. I asked him how he keeps it all from going to his head.
I guess the celebrity status could be a temptation for anyone, but as a priest, I'm somewhat protected in this. I'm required to spend time in quiet prayer and reflection. A holy hour a day gives me a great perspective. I'm just me doing something good for God.
Father Leo does get criticism from some Catholics who think it's inappropriate for a priest to be doing what he does. But he asserts that his food ministry is deeply Christian.
We believe, at least in the Catholic Church, what binds us together and what binds God to us is food, a piece of bread turned into the body and blood of Christ, in which we are incorporated into his family. So I got to tell you, I know that the collar freaks people out a little bit.
Father Leo says for him, one of the most important parts of his cooking ministry is reaching out to people who may be uncomfortable with priests and helping them learn a little about God.
He can take a breakdancing, board-breaking, bread-breaking priest and, you know, give hope to people who might not understand the church or might understand a priest.
And that, he says, is a grace that extends beyond every meal.
Parents are often looking for entertaining and educational outings for their kids. Well, an interactive museum in Brooklyn, New York, helps children learn about the Jewish faith, from holidays to traditional rituals and Bible stories. Education Director Rabbi Nissen Brennenson gave us a tour of the Jewish Children's Museum.
As you approach the museum, the first thing you see is a giant photo mosaic. And as you get closer, you realize that it's made up of thousands and thousands of smaller photographs of children of all ages, of all races. Then that contains a special message, and that is that we're really one. The gallery on the 6 days of creation and the Shabbat, the Sabbath, contains a Shabbat table where you're actually walking on the table. There are Shabbat candlesticks, a giant crawl-through challah tunnel. Inside the tunnel, you can learn about the ingredients, the significance of the special challah bread. Hanukkah is also a favorite. We have an olive oil pressing station where children can actually squeeze their own olive oil. They like to do that, and the olive oil represents the miracle of the oil that happened at the time of the Hanukkah story. I think we have the world's only touchscreen Seder plate. And by pressing the screen and selecting the various symbolic items on the Seder plate, the children can watch short clips of what these symbols represent and the story of Passover. The holiday of trees is called Tu B'Shvat. And here at the museum, we have our own special talking Tu B'Shvat tree.
Tu B'Shvat is my birthday.
He's sort of a storyteller and explains how man is compared to a tree in many ways. We have our roots, and that's our faith. And we also have our fruits, and those are the good deeds that we perform. The journey continues into our kosher supermarket, where children can scan products. Instead of coming up with prices, there are trivia questions about the kosher diet, as well as a full-scale kosher kitchen. The last gallery on that floor focuses on values that are rooted in Jewish tradition but have also become universal, such as kindness, kindness to others, kindness to animals, respecting the environment, charity.
In other news this week, we note two deaths in the world of religion.
I want Jesus! I want Jesus!
One of the country's last circuit preachers, Pastor David Brown, passed away at the age of 64. He had served seven African-American congregations in Mississippi and Louisiana because they were too small to have their own pastor. Our program did two stories about his ministry. Brown said it didn't matter how small the congregations were because, as he put it, they have souls that need to be fed.
I guess this is it for the day.
Pastor Brown collapsed and died during a church revival meeting in West Monroe, Louisiana. And Gospel Music Hall of Fame artist Doug Oldham died after injuring his back during a fall. He was 79. Oldham worked with prominent evangelicals, including Jerry Falwell, Billy Graham, and fellow gospel stars Bill and Gloria Gaither. He recorded 65 albums in a career that spanned more than four decades. Finally, a group of cloistered nuns from a convent in southern France are recording an album of their own. The Benedictine sisters from the Abbey of Notre-Dame de l'Annonciation have signed a deal with Decca Records to produce an album of Gregorian chants. In order not to disturb their cloistered way of life, the sisters will photograph the album cover and film their own music video. By the way, the nuns' record label is the same one that has also brought you Elton John, the Rolling Stones, and Lady Gaga. That's our program for now. I'm Kim Lawton. We'd like to hear from you. You can follow us on our Facebook page. We also have much more on our website, including a link to many of Father Leo's recipes. You can comment on all of our stories and share them. Audio and video podcasts are also available. Join us at pbs.org. As we leave you, more music from Doug Oldham.
Does he care when my heart is pained? Too deeply for mirth or even a song. When the burdens press, when the cares press down in distress, and my way grows weary and long.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're yourretirementcompany.com. Also by the Henry Luce Foundation and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Be more PBS.